audiobook in many half-hour parts of online book, Eternal Pilgrim. Not all the book, but most. Book of Awe by Ripley Webb. A visit to Earth's past, present and future. The content in these audio files will cover Chapter 1, Strange Visitor. 2, Journey into Space. 3, The Birth of a World. 7, The Crust Hardens. 8, Lemuria. 9, Atlantis. 10, The Great Catastrophe. 11, Atlantean Colonization. 12, The Coming of Christianity. 13, The New World. 14, City of the Future. And Chapter 15, Ethereal Earth. Chapter 1. Strange Visitor. Most people will have experienced that queer sensation when you feel there is someone in the room, and you're equally certain that its sole occupant is yourself. I am not an abnormally sensitive type, so when I became conscious of the idea of another presence while working in my study, I just gave myself a metaphorical kick and went on sorting the pile of notes from which I hoped to evolve another book. My last one was in print and I had recovered from that exciting interlude which follows such an event. Sheer necessity compelled me to get down to the business of preparing the next one. I had long had a pressing desire to write about what I believed to be the origins of mankind, more nearly approaching reality than the symbology of Genesis or the half-truths which science, inspired by Darwin, has built around the theory of natural selection. Certainly they couldn't both be right. To this end I had read widely and thought deeply over many years, going to considerable lengths to get authentic information and fresh inspiration from every possible source, not excluding those hidden in myth and legend, inscription and papyrus. From these I discovered an amazing similarity of ideas and legends evinced by peoples who dwelt in widely separated parts of the globe and between whom there was then no known means of communication. On mountain and in cavern, on monolith and on pottery, are to be found the same symbols pointing to a high degree of civilization and culture, though not the same kind as our own, so far into the backness of history that the mind can scarcely reckon the centuries, periods when science would affirm that man was in his stone age, with poor mind development. Where and how did man start, and how to reconcile his sad history of struggle and defeat with any idea of spiritual goodness? These were thoughts that had dominated my mind. There seemed to be some key that was missing in the sequence of events. If that could be found, it might be possible to unlock further doors to our understanding. I think I gave a little sigh of exasperation, when almost immediately I felt again that sensation of not being alone. I felt I was being watched. If you gaze intently enough at a person, however deeply he may be engrossed, sooner or later he will look up. Loath to break the continuity of my thoughts, I raised my head and looked over at the door. With my mind still adrift on a sea of conjecture, I gazed uncertainly at what must surely be a figment of my imagination, one of those figures of ancient times, whose activities I had been studying so intently, must have come into subjective vision. For standing in the shadows of that corner of the room was the figure of man. It was a dull afternoon and my reading lamp was on, so that at first I could not make out the exact appearance of my visitor. But gradually my eyes adjusted their focus and my scattered wits came tumbling out of the past to grapple with this novel situation. To my astonishment, the figure gave a deep, almost oriental bow, and I perceived a smile on the features of this strange being. Although he wore a small beard, the man was, I should say, about middle-aged, with features finely cut and revealing the subtle wisdom of the seer. His eyes were dark and of a luminosity that did more than reflect the light of my lamp, they had a magnetic quality that held my gaze. He was dressed in a belted robe of some indeterminate material that was rich and skillfully cut. But the outstanding quality of this man was the radiant power that emanated from him, banishing my first sense of fear, and compelling trust in him. Having bowed his dignified greeting, the stranger moved forward and instinctively I rose to my feet. "I give you good day," he said, and I was immediately struck by the melodious quality of his voice, one which inspired confidence. It seemed to indicate a power that was not of this world, I ask your pardon, he went on, for this unceremonious entrance, but I beg just a moment of your time. I suppose I must, in an embarrassment of the moment, have indicated a chair, for the stranger glided towards it and sat down, with only the rustle of his garments to indicate the movement. As his features came within the aureole of the reading lamp, I too sat down, but hurriedly and in some trepidation. For it was becoming evident that my visitor was no flesh and blood mortal, but either a figment of my imagination or a manifestation from some other world. The stranger seemed to sense my confusion, for he put out a hand which I grasped and found to be naturally warm and firm. Accompanying the gesture, he smiled, in so intimate and friendly a fashion that my growing fears fled in confusion. In some queer way it seemed that I knew this man, though of course it couldn't be so, or could it? I wondered. But before I could follow up that thought, my visitor dropped his gaze to my desk, with its untidy clutter of papers and notes. "Forgive my impertinence," he observed, "but you are writing another book?" I wondered how he knew I was a writer. I replied, deprecatingly, that it had scarcely got as far as that yet, that in fact there seemed to be insuperable difficulties which I could not yet see my way to overcome. I explained the nature of the task I had set myself and added, I believe so implicitly in the goodness of God and in the benign purpose of creation, and I want to show that man's history has a benign meaning and purpose, rather than being a dreary record of soulless evolution. I believe that the answer lies in prehistoric history, but there seems to be a missing key which I cannot trace. My visitor nodded his head gravely and thought for a moment before he spoke. I was aware of your predicament and have ventured to call upon you with the object of helping you in your task. My eyes opened in astonishment as my gaze roamed over his unworldly appearance. Hastily he went on. I have some knowledge of the period of history to which you refer, and I have access to records that will be beyond your reach. It would give me great pleasure to assist you in linking those periods into a coherent order that will, I hope, impress your readers with a new understanding of what human existence is all about. I could hold back my inquisitiveness no longer. Pardon me, I asked, but would you mind telling me who you are? Most cleverly he parried my question. Perhaps it was a trick of the A's, but without seeming discourteous he made me satisfied with only a partial answer. My name is Zeros, he observed, and I have been taking a considerable interest in your work. I belong to an organization which aims at presenting to the world just those aspects of life which lie behind the subjects on which you are engaged. And I am trespassing on their preserves? I suggested. On the contrary. We have been looking for a channel by which we might give our work concrete form, and in you we find just what we were looking for. We could be of much mutual assistance should you feel inclined to cooperate with us. My eyes must have goggled with the excitement I felt at this remark. It was all so extraordinary, so incredible, that I could hardly take in the implications. What sort of society is this? I asked, more for the sake of gaining time than for any other reason. But he who named himself Zeros refused to be drawn at this juncture. If I gave you that information, it would mean little to you and might confuse the issue. Let it suffice that your subject and ours are identical. You will have guessed that I, strange in appearance and garb to you, am not now a physical being. Nevertheless, I assure you that I am in close touch with events in your world, and my sole desire is to be of assistance to you and those who think like you. A momentary pause and he went on. I see in your mind that you have advanced ideas on the spiritual realities that underlie the troubled existence of present-day humanity. You realize that there are states of being on planes of experience other than your own, and that it is only by a comprehensive survey of all possible planes of experience that you can hope to solve the enigma of human existence. I nodded, my mind racing too fast for coherent speech. Let me assure you that my visit has a very real purpose. In fact, you would not believe me if I told you how long this contact with you has been under consideration by myself and my colleagues, nor of the vast amount of work that has been put into the preparations. Your world has, reached a point in mind development where it is ready for new ideas and a new rate of understanding. Such knowledge will eventually change the whole course of human existence, and demonstrate a new way of life, quite at variance with the old. And how do you propose to help me in this? Will you dictate the book? Zeros looked at me very closely before replying. I must ask for your trust and confidence, he said at length, for I am going to present to you a possibility that you may find it very difficult to accept. Your complete faith in me and my power to carry out what I propose will be essential if we are to succeed. Pray listen very carefully to what I am going to say. There was silence while Zeros seemed to be marshalling his thoughts. You are aware, I think, of how the events of the terrestrial world are recorded automatically by their impact on what I might term the plastic ethers surrounding your Earth, rather in the way your recording machines work. As I nodded agreement, he continued. Every event which has taken place on your Earth, every vibrant thought, has been imprinted on its ethers. You cannot tap those records, for you are too closely veiled in human flesh to be able to tune into such attenuated vibrations. But on the plane where I work, we can use them and to a considerable extent view, and even reconstruct, that which has transpired in the long eras of earthly history. I gasped in wonderment. I knew that it was possible for some acutely sensitive people to glimpse fragments of these records of the past, but to read whole histories, to rebuild pictures - Do you mean to tell me that you can see events like the Battle of Hastings, or the burning of Rome - the story of Adam and Eve? Zeros smiled understandingly. Certain aspects, yes. Yes, even that strange symbology of Adam and Eve, but not in the literal form your interpreters have conceived. But not only can we see the past, we can to some extent unroll the scroll of the future and produce a synthesis of tendencies which will give some idea of how events will work out, though that will depend on the level of events which is under review. You see, as you rise in outlook, as your thoughts are lifted from the mundane to the spiritual, what you call time merges into the eternal, or if you prefer to name it timelessness. The lower you get, the nearer to the mundane, the more does free will enter into the picture. At the top of the scale, free will must have merged into the will of God and ceases to affect the issue. The divine law is free from interference, and a clearer picture can be obtained. On that supernal level, prophecy is an exact science, but the more free will encroaches, the more is prophecy distorted. From my studies, I was well aware that time is not what we claim it to be. It is rather a prison of the mind, constricting our viewpoint and providing a bar to understanding. But I must confess that I was not prepared for such a sweeping assertion. Surely, I protested, you cannot just go along the pathway of time and know how whole nations, for example, are going to rise or fall? You must realize, said Zeros, searching for words in which to convey reasoning based upon values unfamiliar to me. Time belongs to your physical universe, to your sense perception. It is an extension into the material from the ethereal realms where it begins to merge into timelessness. You can measure any object, but you cannot measure spirit. If you study astronomy, you will find your time melting away into something else for which you have to invent strange terms to convey your meaning, such as light years. Have I got to explain that to my readers? I asked anxiously. Zeros laughed, merrily, like a schoolboy. I do not propose to tax your credulity, nor theirs, to that extent. It will not matter what conception they have of time. I was but emphasizing my ability to transcend what is, after all, but a physical law. And I do not intend to dictate your book for you. I have more impressive proposals to offer than to make you a mere amanuensis. He glanced keenly at me as he went on, and he put the question in the utmost seriousness. Are you prepared to embark with me on an adventure the like of which has never before been offered to any human being? I am all for adventure, I replied, especially if it is going to help me write this book. But I should like some more information first. Zeros now spoke with a depth of meaning in his voice not lost on me. Suppose, instead of my describing to you, however graphically, the tremendous saga of earthly history from its very inception, I were to enable you to visit, as it were, the very scenes where those events of cosmic importance took place, in short, to witness the events in retrospect. How would you like to accompany me into the depths of space and time, and witness, say, the very birth of this planet? B. But that is not possible, I protested, feeling I was letting go of my sanity. I am accustomed to traveling through eons of time in imagination, but to go in person, to see Dash. To bring back Dash. No, that was unthinkable. I looked at my visitor doubtfully. It was as if he had asked me to go and live like a fish in the sea. Zeros divined my perplexity but made no effort to expand the idea which had shocked my sensibilities. He just sat there looking at me with his kindly expression. I could feel the power radiating from him to me, calming, soothing, yet making no attempt to influence my decision. Yet curiously I could not help thinking that the decision had already been made by me, perhaps on some other plane of experience. While my rational mind discarded the whole idea as fantastic and not to be taken seriously, something irresistible within me compelled acceptance. I began to know that I must do what he asked. There was no hypnosis about it. I felt that here was the theme of my life, the reason for my existence. I had come to Earth to do this thing. Almost unawares I heard his voice, speaking gently and persuasively, impelling confidence. Let me assure you that you will be in reasonable safety, though I will not deny that there may be risks to your physical body, which must obviously be left behind. But rest assured that every eventuality has been most carefully considered by experts and the risks reduced to vanishing point. I will not weary my readers with the discussions that followed. Zeros told me much, both of his own life and work and of the history of this planet. In the end I agreed to the proposal, not because my rational objections were overcome but because of that inner urge that would not let me say no. Finally Zeros asked me if there were any questions I would like to ask concerning my book. I thought for a while, there were so many. Then suddenly my mind fastened upon the one question of all that was troubling me. How is the biblical story of Adam and Eve to be reconciled with what we know of the theory of evolution? Zeros answered without hesitation. They were not, of course, individuals. Few today would accept that all the evils of the world could be traced to the first man and the first woman. Your Genesis contains a mystical and poetical interpretation of something that could not be expressed in terms of human understanding. We might say that Adam stands for the Adamic race, the first true men of Earth. But it also stands for the masculine element in creative intelligence, for you must realize that in pure spirit there can be no differentiation of sex, that could only come about through the process of manifestation. For every Adam there is an Eve, and in the realm of pure spirit they are one in a homogeneous being. It was during the descent into experience that the sexes became separated, and many were the stresses that were engendered by that bifurcation, rendered necessary by the exercise of self-will. But I will not labor that point now. It is my hope that you will come to a realization of the truth through what you will observe for yourself. Loath to leave this absorbing subject I said, I suppose the Earth was always intended to evolve as well as mankind. You must try and rid yourself of the idea that the Earth, as you know it, was originally part of the divine plan. Immense effort has been expended in trying to explain why God should have prepared an environment for his children which offers little beyond frustration, suffering and prodigious labor even to exist. It could not have been his desire that millions should have to scratch a bare living amid conditions that were biased against success. But a fallen race of spiritual beings rendered it essential. You can only find a meaning to life by regarding human existence as a long, long saga of rehabilitation from a cosmic fall, the dimensions of which are beyond your understanding. There is a creative plan, sublime and merciful, perfect beyond your imagination. And it is my purpose to try and unfold for you the fringe of that plan so that you may comprehend the utter goodness of him who designed it. After some further discussion concerning future visits, Zero stood up, as if to indicate that he must depart. "My friend, I cannot promise to make clear to you the fullness of truth. No human mind could achieve that. There is much we shall have to leave unsolved. But what has been ordained by the Supernal One must triumph in the end. It could not be otherwise. Now I must be gone. May the blessing of the Eternal One hold you in His infinite love until we meet again." I do not know by what process Zero's managed to disappear from my vision. One moment he was there, radiating love and confidence, then he was not. Perhaps that was because his delightful personality lingered long after he ceased to be visible. Before leaving, he had given me certain instructions I must follow. Now I went over these in an attempt to quieten the emotional thrill that filled my being. I dared not even think about what was to be. That I, a nobody, was to experience what must be the strangest adventures that could fall to the lot of man. Chapter 2. Journey into Space. On the day appointed for Zero's next visit, I was at Twitter with an excitement I could scarcely control. I had not the strength of mind to confess to my family what had transpired on the momentous occasion when I first learned what Zero's had in mind. I am sure they would have feared for my sanity or dismissed the whole thing as the result of a pleasant afternoon nap. Whatever the reason, however, they all had outdoor appointments on that afternoon. Subsequently, I enlightened them, and though they stoutly maintained their loyalty, what I told them must surely have strained their credulity to the utmost. To quieten my nervous excitement, I busied myself with the notes for my book, so that it was once more a shock when her voice broke in upon my vagrant thoughts. "Greetings, my friend, I beg you to relax." I started violently. Perhaps half of me had derided the idea that I should see Zeros again, that I was a fool to expect anyone, that it was all a hallucination. Yet here he was, imperturbable as ever, standing as before just inside the door. In a moment I was on my feet, wildly excited, tremendously pleased because my intuition was right. But though I indicated a chair, Zeros made no attempt to leave his place by the door. "You are in a great state of mental excitement," he observed reproachfully. "Please realize that to an ethereal body such as mine, the emotional vibrations of a human being are somewhat trying." He smiled engagingly as he added, "To me you take on the nature of a furiously boiling kettle. It is difficult to approach you." Instantly I controlled my excitement and made my apologies. Zeros made a slight gesture of his hand as if to dismiss so unimportant a matter, and with a gracious acknowledgement came forward and took my hands in his own. Immediately I felt a flow of power entering into me, quelling my nervous excitement and leaving me with a sense of serenity and peace. "That is better," said Zeros, letting my hands go. When we were both seated, he continued, "We could hope for no good results while your mind was in such a state of agitation, though it was quite understandable. But you will realize that what we have ahead of us will require the subjection of the normal physical emotions so that you may be free to leave your body for underdimensional travel. And now, my friend, are you still of the same mind concerning the proposals I made to you on my first visit?" He looked keenly at me as he spoke, and I sensed that my decision would mean a great deal to him. "Yes, indeed," I replied without hesitation. "It is my dearest wish to learn the secrets of man's origin, and this tremendous adventure you offer me excites my imagination. I realize fully the honor you are doing me, and my only hope is that I may do justice to it." Zeros gave a little sigh of satisfaction, and then we had some further conversation concerning the methods to be adopted, after which he announced his readiness to commence. Can you imagine my feelings? Almost did I panic. My trepidation must have showed itself. Here was I, an obscure writer, about to make an experiment that would have caused banner headlines in all the newspapers of the world, if they could believe in it. At Zero's request, I locked the door and drew the curtains. Then I sat in my chair and closed my eyes, striving to relax. But in this I failed. Naturally, every conceivable detracting thought raced through my mind, as if my subconscious were afraid and unwilling to permit the experiment. With all my will I strove to banish them until I felt cooling fingers smoothing my brow, dash, quietening my thoughts, dash, bringing peace, dash, thinning out consciousness. It seemed that a voice had been speaking to me for ages and ages, soft yet clear and insistent. It was telling me to wake up, to open my eyes. Was it really time to get up? Had I overslept? I opened my eyes, and realized that I must still be dreaming. I shook my head in an attempt to bring back consciousness. Then I became aware of an unaccustomed stillness and an absence of feeling. I seemed to be volatile and free from all restrictions, yet never had I felt more awake. I looked about me for some object that would restore my sense of integrity. Then suddenly memory rushed in with a great revelation. I found myself alone, poised in the high untrespassed sanctity of space, terribly alone, frighteningly alone. There was nothing to touch, nowhere to set my feet. Had I any feet? I wasn't seeing very clearly. There was no scenery about me. All was emptiness and darkness. No, not really dark, not quite empty. For all around me were stars, like no other stars I had ever seen. They were brilliant with a strange light, tremblingly alive in a way I cannot find words to describe. The way they twinkled made it seem as if they were talking to me. Then an actual voice broke in upon my thoughts. I could see no one nor hear with my ears, yet the words formed in my mind as if I were reading. It was the voice of Zeros. It was a tremendous relief to know he was there. His thoughts continued to pour into my mind, soothing, strengthening, telling me to get used to this strange method of contact, to look about me and let the reality of what I saw sink into my consciousness. I did so and at once confidence returned and I began to be more at one with this tremendous expanse of what seemed to be emptiness but which was taking on, more and more, an aspect of reality. The sense of isolation vanished and I felt more at home. Soon my first feeling of lightness and freedom came back. My sensations were like no dream that I ever had. There was reality and power present everywhere which entirely made up for any lack of scenery. All that I saw seemed to be imbued with wonderful harmony, as if nothing could ever go wrong with it. I was poised in a darkness that in some queer way was transparent, most friendly and giving no hint of any possible hidden menace. As I gazed I felt my vision expanding further and further. Above me, the starry array seemed to have endless depth and substance. I glanced below me and saw with mixed amazement and relief the familiar globe of Earth where my physical body still rested. Away to my right was the sun, shining as I had never seen it before, no longer searing the eyes with its terrible intensity but glowing with a golden radiance that was lovely to look upon. I could have gazed at that beauty for hours on end. To my left was the moon, a silver well of reflected glory, no longer cold and dead but thrillingly alive. I became aware that I had a body, but so disinterested was my mind that I could not determine whether it held any resemblance to the physical. I was capable of feeling yet had no sensation of heat or cold. But what did that matter when my mind was so vitally, gloriously alive? I felt splendid, brilliant, free, yet immensely humble amidst great influences which I could sense but not perceive. Around me were worlds, worlds, and I felt somehow that I was part of them. Every moment I felt my life melting into theirs, becoming part of the great symphony of life that was manifested before me. No longer were the stars inaccessible and unknown fragments of matter, with a meaning only for those who study them through the obscuring haze that surrounds the earth. In some curious way they seemed to have a soul of their own, and it was this soul, this universal livingness, which made the link between them and me. All those heavenly bodies appeared to have a life of their own. Oh! If only the earthly astronomers could have stood here with me and seen the reality behind the mere shadow they beheld through their telescopes. Here in this living, glorious expanse of stars they seemed like a friendly concourse of people, winking messages to each other like a mighty fleet at sea. Thoughts came to me again from Zeros, though he was still invisible. This is perfect creation, not as you know it on Earth but perfect with the Creator's perfection.